Breaking It Down with Frank McKay. This is 1039 LI News Radio.
I'd like to welcome everyone to Breaking It Down. Frank McKay here, but much more importantly, stock chart reader extraordinaire Neil Golden is our very special guest. And Neil, how are you?
Very good, Frank. I'm just trying to enjoy the weather.
Yeah, well, it's nice where I am. I don't know where you're how you're doing out there, but in general, what's our climate look like lately for the stock markets or the financial markets?
Well, right now it's beginning to be a little bit choppy, and we're definitely in somewhat of a retracement period here. It hasn't reached any new highs recently, and my forecast for the short-term near future would be that it's going to be going lower in spite of the things that have been happening politically and socially, you know, within the country.
You mentioned the word retracement period. Is that a stock term, or is that it's an interesting term? Can you just define that for us?
Yeah, mainly it refers to like if you're having a bull market and everything goes up well, there comes a point where the stock market takes a breather and it retraces or it retracts. Usually, you know, 10% or 15%, sometimes even 50%. And then it continues to go up. So it just means to a slight pullback in market direction, counter to the main trend that's going on at the time.
Is retracement a euphemism for, and pardon my ignorance on this, for correction?
Yeah, it's one and the same thing, correction. But it doesn't really mean it's a severe correction. It's just a temporary thing. Usually, you know, at most it maybe consists of maybe 20 days or so on average.
You know, Neil, I know you're very cautious, or you want people to be cautious. I shouldn't say you're cautious, but you're very safe. You always want to put out a disclaimer before you start talking, and I'm going to remind you of that, and it says a lot. The disclaimer itself says a whole bunch to people, and it's actually very good advice.
Yeah, that's very important, and thanks for reminding me again. What it is, when it comes to investing, investors should remember that investing is an art. It is not a science. And just because something has happened in the past does not mean there's a guarantee that it will happen in the future. And above all, you should always be aware that you're taking risk, and never invest with money you can't afford to lose.
You know, this sounds like a disclaimer that you could have said 50 years ago. You could say 50 years from now. I don't think that it's ever going to be a science. I mean, I think it's always going to, I think this is one thing in our world that won't change. I don't think it'll ever be, I don't see how it could be come down to a science, because things are constantly changing. There's so much human emotion attached there. And unless we're all robots, unless robots are only allowed to invest, I think that this disclaimer lasts for a very long time. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, because right now, with all the computers that we have and machines that can think, you know, in a split second and make a decision, it is becoming more computerized. But the human element of decision making has been taken out. But on the most part, it will never be replaced. The judgment that a person can make. Even though, you know, everything will be automatically done by, like I said, computers in the future.
Let me remind folks, if they're just tuning in or turning on their radios, Frank McKay here with a wonderful stock chart reader and a commentator on all things financial and stock market and Wall Street and a little bit of everything, society. Neil Golden, Frank McKay here. With Neil Golden, thrilled to be each and every week discussing all of the things that come along with this. Neil, has anything surprised you at all over the course of time? Was there anything that just came out of left field in the markets and you just were just taken aback and said, wow, how could something like that happen? How could something, you know, I'm sure there's been cases, but is there anything that pops to mind right away?
Recently, no, but there's also the thing that there's a lot of things to consider. And, you know, since the economy has gone sort of global, as they call it, you know, there's a lot of factors there. You can't see, you know, that coming. And recently, I guess the only thing that surprised me is that the currency factor, the importance of, or strength of the American dollar is now playing an important part in the stock market, whereas in years past, it's been pretty minimal. But recently, with the interest rates going up, the value of the dollar has sort of lessened, and I've never seen this happen before. So as I mentioned maybe a couple of weeks ago, it was mainly between bonds and stocks. The money exchange would go in one direction or the other, but now it seems to be currencies are taking an active role in it. And like I said, I didn't see this coming.
You know, we talk quite a bit, and people talk quite a bit about infrastructure, the infrastructure in the country, and there are those talking now that the president should concentrate on rebuilding roads and airports and the roads to the airports specifically. Your thoughts on all of that?
Well, they say that in general, getting on an airplane and flying is a lot safer than driving. And the computer system that the airports are using right now, it's very outdated. It dates back to maybe the 70s at the earliest, or maybe the 80s. But it should be upgraded because we just have lots of flights going daily. You know, it's in the thousands. And so that's a lot of air traffic going on, and when you consider that there could be, you know, up to 200 people on, you know, any one air flying, so you wouldn't want them to have a crash or anything like that, because, you know, it's a lot of loss of life. But in general, they were saying that it's a lot safer to fly than it is to drive.
Yeah, statistically, I think without question, because I mean, if we hear about a fatality in an airplane, even if it's a small airplane, it's usually national news. You know, there's fatalities every single day in cars, and we don't hear about them because they're so multiple. So I mean, there's so many of them, unfortunately, and the tragedy is just the same. But when an airplane crashes, it is national, if not international, news.
Yeah, it's very true. And what was interesting to me is during this week or so, earlier in this week, we had an incident involving United Airlines. And sir, I don't really follow, you know, airplanes or their air industry, but in general, I just know at this point there's only like three big carriers. I think there are Delta, United, and American Airlines. Those are the largest three carriers out there. And what it is, I guess, over time, is these have come out to be the strongest ones, and they've gobbled up everybody else, leaving just the small commuter airlines, things like Southwest, you know, Alaska, and other airlines that just do commuting jobs. So in that sense, it's the, you know, the strong survive and the small end up perishing.
Yeah. United Airlines.
What was the question again? I'm sorry.
But what happened with United Airlines this week, and it's just a tremendous amount of publicity and the type of publicity you don't want to have. I mean, can that affect the market? I mean, the stock of something like United Airlines?
It was sort of interesting is that on the day of the incident, they had a passenger that they wanted to take off the airline, and he didn't want to go. So they more or less physically forced him to get off the airplane. Stock didn't drop immediately, but the next day it did have a drop in price. And I think in overall, the company lost maybe $255 million in value.
Wow.
But the thing that I liked about it is that I looked up at the chart on United Airlines, and in reading that chart, it was even better than looking at, let's say, the Dow Jones Industrial Average or the NASDAQ or the or the Russell, in a sense that it's a very clear chart to read, and just reading the chart for United Airlines, I'm almost certain, you know, up to about 90% that the market is going to go lower. And what is astounding is that sometimes, you know, there's, I'd say, national events or social events that coincide with the movement of the market. Another event was this week they dropped a big bomb in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
And that also just coincides, I feel, with the direction of the market in the sense that in the afternoon the market sort of sold off. And I wouldn't say it's a direct cause of the bomb, but it just coincided, with the direction that the market is going at this time.
Yeah, you know, there's something I just Googled it now as you're talking about it, but somebody mentioned that this incident and the publicity surrounding this incident cost United Airlines $250 million, something like that. I don't know how that's even possible. Is that in drop of stock? Is that what that is?
I don't think the price drop was that, you know, drastic, but in one day. And what I like to do is when I see a drop like this, and it's not due to operation cost or anything like that.
You like to buy.
I feel, but what I would do is I would follow the stock. Eventually, it's going to turn around, and maybe because of the summer and if people increase their travel, it should regain the price that it was at before the incident happened earlier this week. So it should make a quick recovery, but you'd have to follow it. But right now, like I said, it's going in the same direction that the market is going in, which is down. So it's just coincidental.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, very interesting. And it's an incident like this that, yeah, right, like you said, it might not be directly causing it. But now is a you see knee-jerk reactions happening all over the place. Frank McKay here with stock chart reader Neil Golden. Each and every week you can hear Neil's take on the events of the week and how they affect the markets and all types of financial situations. Let me ask you about a particular stock and a kind of a story behind it. PayPal. What do you know about PayPal stock?
Actually, I don't know that much, but I'd say maybe about a year and a half ago, I was sitting down and talking to somebody I had gone to high school with, and they seemed to be doing very well, and they said that they were moving to one of the suburbs of Chicago. And I started asking more questions, and they just told me, you know, flat out that they are one of the very first investors in PayPal when it was just a penny stock, and they bought a lot of it. And I said, oh, that's very interesting. But just this week, I found out how important PayPal is to the internet, and I was shocked.
Yeah.
because what I learned about PayPal is it's a system that you use to pay when you buy things on the internet. If you're not using a credit card, you can use PayPal. But it's just the idea that anybody with a smartphone in their hand now has a bank branch in their hand, and you can use PayPal to buy things on like eBay or Amazon or other websites that you go to, you know, without putting your credit card information out there. And it's a pretty safe system to use, but it's just that the importance of it is in the sense that it's a transaction without any money really taking place, you know. And I think to some extent, you know, banks are trying to cash in on this same trend that's going on. It's a cashless transaction, and there's a lot of money involved in it. It makes life a lot simpler.
Yeah, well, no question, and safer. And again, Frank McKay here with Neil Golden. And I, you know, just touching on PayPal a little bit, you brought up a great point, and you used the term safe. I don't particularly like giving out my credit card to strangers on a website. I don't know who's going to get it or who's going. You know, I'm a little nervous about that. So the thing is, I would much rather put it through something like PayPal. But again, in the beginning, you don't know who has the sustainability. You don't know who has the best program. PayPal, I mean, if they bought out a penny stock, do you have any idea what the stock trades for now, roughly?
No, I do not know. I don't even know if it's split. From my reading about it, I think maybe one of the founders was Elon Musk, and I think at some point he sold his interest in PayPal for a couple of $1 billion, and then he went to turn to cars. So he's now making a Tesla, and he's very happy. But in a sense that that's the kind of stock I think everybody, you know, wants to get in on the bottom and be one of the first investors and profit from it. So in a sense, if like this couple I just mentioned, I don't know if they borrowed on their house or how they did it, but they did concentrate on that one stock, and it paid off.
Yeah, it's worth mentioning again. And I spoke about it off mic for a moment, but I told you about my friend's brother who put his lawsuit money. He had an injury. He was a custodian, and he had an injury, and he put his lawsuit win into Disney stock when Disney bought Star Wars, or Lucasfilms, I should say. You hear different stories like that. And you mentioned something, and we started getting into it off mic a little bit, but about Pixar. What can you tell us about Pixar?
Oh, yeah, in the sense that for animation purposes, Pixar, I think they're one of the biggest blockbusters. When it first came out, I think it was Tom Hanks did was one of the voices in the
Toy Story.
Yeah, Toy Story. Yeah, that was it. Yeah. And it was a big block, and they have this guy named I think his name is Lucas, John Lucas or something. He's really a terrific animator, and since then they've had other blockbusters, and now, you know, it's owned by Disney. Yeah. Which is quite a global entertainment thing, from, you know, television stations. I think they own basketball teams in China, and they own theme parks all around the world. So they're not only into making movies, but they're doing everything that's closely related to communications. So, you know, it's just a worldwide global company that's very huge in size. So the thing about Disney is, when I was a little kid, I was born in the late 40s, but I met other kids or people my age that their parents just gave them $1,000 worth of Disney when they were born, but now they're worth a lot of money. So that didn't happen in my family, but I've met people that are quite well off with Disney stock over the long run.
Wow. Just imagine that, just a you know, birth gift or a christening gift or something along those lines, mm-hmm. being Disney stock back in the 40s and what it's worth now. It's just absolutely amazing. Neil, I want to thank you very much for the information, as always. Just great, as always. Thank you very much.
Oh, well, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, and I hope you have a good weekend.
You too, and to everyone listening out there, we appreciate it, and we encourage everyone to binge listen to everything we've done. So much good work here with Neil Golden, stock chart reader. Neil Golden has been our guest once again. Frank McKay signing off. We will see you next week on Breaking It Down.